Hello and welcome. My name is Gino Barbaro, one of the co-founders of Jake and Gino. And today's guest is Jaron JD Sustar, real estate investor and host of the Finance Cowboy Show. By the age of 30, he went from $100,000 in debt. I wonder what that $100,000 in debt is. Maybe it's student debt. We'll talk about that. To a net worth of over $1 million thanks to his side gig of real estate investing, and is now on a mission to help equip others to do the same. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Jaron.
Gino, thanks for having me, man. I'm so excited to be here.
It's nice to reciprocate because I was on your show, and look at all the swag that Mr. Jaron sent me. Yeah, brother. I want to say big thank you. I didn't want to send you a letter. I just wanted to say go-giver, massive go-giver. And I think he understands he's in the real estate business. It's all about networking. It's all about net worth. And that's how you grow your net worth and relationships. So I wanted to give you a big shout out. But dude, let's rip it back a little bit. 100 G in debt. Where'd that debt come from?
Oh my goodness, man. I started like all millennials do, way behind the eight ball. I don't want to say it's all millennials. I'm sure people for a while have been struggling with this, but I went to play. My whole life's dream was to play Division I baseball. That's all I wanted to do. And so I got an opportunity to play at Charleston Southern University, Division I, small mid-major school. And I had, I don't know, call it 40% baseball scholarship. So the way baseball works, you got to field a roster of 40, but a school our size only had 9 full scholarships. So 40 men, 9 scholarships, you got to divvy it up. So I had 40% scholarship. Well, that means I had to cover the rest. Well, my dad's a pastor, so I don't come from money. And so, you know, wasn't going to get paid for there, so we took out student loans. And so by the time it was all said and done, graduated with about $65,000 in student loan debt. Then I had to buy my wife an engagement ring, girlfriend at the time, an engagement ring. Then, of course, I'm from South Carolina, so you have to have a jacked up truck. So I had to go buy the Ford truck with the nice tires. And so that puts me at, what, 90-something thousand. Then I read up some credit cards. And I think I got an article written on me by MarketWatch one time, and they audited all my finances. And so I literally had to go find those exact numbers. And I think when we did that audit, it was like a little over 110,000. And that's how we started. And I was came out of college making $45,000 a year driving a box truck at Cintas as a service rep.
What was that feeling like to see that number? And numbers don't lie. We could be all emotional, but when you see that number of $110,000, what was that feeling like?
Initially, you don't think you're ever going to get ahead. You're just like, all right, well, what do I do? You know, it's, now on this side of the coin, you know what to do. But at some point, you don't know what to do. And I was like, holy crap, like, how am I ever going to get out of this? I knew enough to say, first thing I have to do is raise my income. I'm like, dude, I got to make more money. Like 45 grand wasn't cutting it. You know, it was fine money to be however old I was, 22 years old. And so I like really started working from being in the service side of things because I had a college degree to getting into sales. That was kind of my mission. And so I made that jump and was able to get into pharmaceutical sales out of Cintas. And that bumped it up a little bit, still not making a ton of money because it was a startup. But I was on that path. And so I had that mindset. It was like, okay, let's start increasing the amount of money we're having because the income you have is the fuel that generates your journey to wealth. You're going to get there faster the more money you have. But then the second part of that equation is let's not spend so much money. And so we were at a church in South Florida. I moved to South Florida to take the pharma job. This country boy from South Carolina did not fit in down there. But we went to a church, and this bald guy, had no idea who he was. Obviously, he's very famous, named Dave Ramsey, spoke that morning and then pitched his Financial Peace University. And so my wife and I were 22, 23 years old. We just got married. So let's go figure this out. And so we went through his class. We can unpack what I agree with and disagree with Dave Ramsey because I don't agree with everything. But at the time in our life where I was already working on generating more income, his program helped us eliminate debt. And so we went on a journey for 5 years, dude. I tell my story now of, oh, we had this wealth and we had these rentals and we're doing good. But for 5 years, it's a long time. It felt long. We just paid off debt, increased income and paid off debt.
There's so much I have to unpack there. I think the first thing is it's not real rocket science. You're raising your income. You need to make more money. Yep. The hard part is to spend less. And I don't fault millennials or the next generation after that. There's just so much that you guys can buy. Myself growing up, I didn't have a phone. I had instant gratification, but I couldn't gratify myself in a lot of things. I actually had to get into a car, go to a store, and use cash because I didn't have credit cards when I was younger. Now we all have Venmo. We have Zelle. It's so much easier to spend, and that dopamine hit. Understand what's going on in your brain. If you're addicted to spending, you're going to go spend money, and in the pleasure center of your brain, you get that dopamine, And it's very hard to overcome that. And so for you, how did you overcome that? How did you come to that, come to Jesus moment and say, I did it, but someone else didn't do it? What made you motivated to want to dig yourself out of that hole?
I think it's a couple things. I was surrounded by people in my life who are wiser than me, and I saw the life that they had. And I wanted that for myself. And they kind of told me, hey, if you're going to do that, it's going to take a little bit of sacrifice, delay gratification, pay now, play later. And then on the other side, the flip side, like I live still to this day in a very rural town in South Carolina. And so the majority of folks, I love them. I have tons of best friends like this, and there's nothing wrong with this mindset, but they're stuck, call it stuck. I mean, some of them are the most happy people I know. So I don't want to bash this set of people, but they were middle class. It's like you wake up, do the same thing every day. You get your 1 week vacation down at Myrtle Beach, and that's life. You live for the weekends. I was like, well, I don't really want that. And so I think seeing both sides of those coins, and then I think one thing that happened for me at a young age that most people don't adopt until they're older is I realized very quickly that buying things did not bring me happiness. And if it did, it's like you said, it was a quick dopamine hit, and then it wore off. And I think there's people who go through their entire life and they're never able to reconcile that in their mind. They keep buying thinking that it's going to bring joy. And I quickly learned, I mean, 24 years old, that happiness was a decision, and it came from experiences and being around the people and doing the things that I enjoyed doing, not obtaining material things. And I said, if I can create a life to where I can choose what I want to do each day, that means I'm going to be able to do the things that I love more with the people I love more and not just accumulate stuff and be a slave to debt. And that's the journey we did.
Jaron, it's a great point that you make, but unfortunately, most people aren't aware. They just go through life, like you said. Oh, you know, first of all, the 5-day work week is a human construct. Yeah. Whoever thought that Monday through Friday's work and Saturday, Sunday is off. So we're not even aware of the decisions we make. And I think if we do become aware of them, you can take a step back and go, I can make choices. I have the opportunity not to buy this thing. But if we're on autopilot, like most of us are, we just scroll through our phones. We're just going through the day. We're not sitting back and we're not really assessing our life. That's where I think the issues come. And at a young age, to be able to do that, it's like, wow, that is a game changer. Because every decision you make going forward is going to be, do I need it? Do I want it? And I will give the millennials a lot of credit here. They aren't into the material things as much as my generation was, but they're into experiences, which is great. But there's so many little things, the leakage that Dave Ramsey talks about. You've got Adobe, you've got Ring, you've got Netflix, you've got Hulu. You have so many subscriptions, so much money that's leaking out of your financial plan that if you don't take control of that, it starts to add up, and then it becomes a mindset where all of a sudden, I'm not going to be as efficient. I'm going to let money go. So I want you to really diagnose this. You're out of college, and for anybody listening to this around that age bracket, or even if you're in a ton of debt, the first thing you need to do is to try to raise your income and the side gig. We're going to get to your side gig real quick, but try to figure out how to create more income. The second thing is get real with yourself. You know, you're not here put on this planet by God, in my estimation, to buy things. You're here on this planet to create impact and to make a better life for you, your family, and to leave a better situation when we're not here anymore. And that's not by going out and just buying Lambos. You need to enjoy yourself, but you need to create that impact for others. And how do you do that? You need to create and learn skills and become more valuable. That's the education component. The third component is start spending less. When did you decide on real estate? What was that aha moment for your real estate venture and your real estate journey?
I think it compounded over time. Like my father-in-law had bought some real estate, not like a huge real estate investor, but had bought land throughout the years in Florida, and it had worked out for him. And then my best friend, I think even more importantly, got into real estate right when we got out of college. He didn't have any debt. And so he got in, kind of was a commercial broker. Well, then their small team decided, you know what? They figured out a strategy. It's not rocket science. But if we go and we build out a system to bring in deals, we can partner up investors to these deals. So they didn't necessarily wholesale. They weren't wholesaling the contracts. They were acting as the closing agent on the contract. So it's kind of like wholesaling, just they took the commission fee instead of wholesaling the contract. And so throughout him doing that, they were getting a ton of deals. And so a lot of times they would give them to investors, but then he started keeping some in his portfolio, or he would weasel his way into a percentage of the deals, even if he wasn't bringing any money because he brought the deal, whatever the case. Well, fast forward a few years, by the time I think it was 27 years old, so 2017, 2018, he's a multimillionaire. And it's like, holy moly. But for all those years that I was paying off debt, he's telling me his journey. So I'm kind of learning and hearing the lingo. He's not even mentoring me on purpose at the time. We're just telling each other. We didn't have kids at the time. We're newly married. We're just talking about our lives at night. And we get to this point in 2018 where we finally pay off our debt. And he's like, hey, bro, no more sitting on the sidelines. Like, it's time to go. And so he actually took me under his wing, helped me find the first property. It was in Greenville, South Carolina, helped me analyze it, helped me find funding for it, helped me close on it, all of it. Get property management in place, and kind of just, you know, gave me that safety net, the security instruction I needed to get in the game, because I just remember being so scared. And I coach a lot of folks. I know you guys too. It's like, man, you get with that person who is their first deal. Oh, it's so scary. I can remember the feeling. And I tried to back out. He's like, you're not backing out. And he pulled me along that finish line. And I'll never forget when I locked up that first property. It's like the first thing in my life that I ever purchased that actually paid me. And so now, like, the fear was kind of done. It's like riding a roller coaster. You're scared the first time you get on it, but as soon as you get off, you're ready to go again. And so that's how I felt. My chest is bowed out a little bit. You know, I live in my little small town, and I'm like, I'm a real estate investor, you know, on one rental property, and I think I'm big stuff. But I was like, bro, the floodgates are open now. And, you know, we kind of hit the ground right up from there.
What's really cool about that story is the paradigm shifts that you've had in your relatively short career. For everybody listening, where have been your paradigm shifts? You know, Jaron goes to college, wants to play baseball. Great. He has to pay for it. And all of a sudden he gets out of college and he's like, dude, I'm not making enough. Paradigm shift. I need to go make more money. So he becomes a pharmaceutical sales rep. And Jake, if you're listening to this, I think he did the same thing you did, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Talk about this on my show. Same.
Yes. So the paradigm shift is, okay, I need to make more money. Then the next paradigm shift is, I don't want to live by the law of Parkinson's, which is saying the more money I make, the more money I'm going to spend. So he starts pulling the brakes. The next paradigm shift is, oh, this Dave Ramsey guy, he's really cool. Some of his information is great. I don't like everything he says, but I need to do the debt snowball. So it takes 5 years. Then this next paradigm shift, which is really crucial, I finally buy something that pays me. Game over. I ain't never going back from that. I'm hooked. The hard part is to go from being broke to getting your debts in order, to taking responsibility, to having long-termism, to having control in your life. And then all of a sudden, once you have control, you have a little mentorship, you have a little guidance, and find that vehicle. And I love your Instagram channel. I think everyone should go look at it, check out Jaron's Instagram channel, The Finance Cowboy. What I like about it, some of his posts are real. And one of them I was watching, reading, listening to the other day, he basically said, if you're broke, don't be doing real estate yet. And it's great because that was his journey. It's basically get your finances in order, get some type of credit score, have a little bit of money for a down payment, and don't take massive risk and learn. And I think that advice is so spot on for anybody listening to this. You want to add anything to that, Jaron?
Well, it's like the old Spider-Man saying, right? With great power comes great responsibility. If you can't even take care of your own personal finances, what gives you the right to control an asset that you were going to lend to people to make it their home? Renters are going to come into your house and make it their home. That's a big responsibility. This is a people business, but you can't even take care of what you got. And so it's like trying to build this kingdom on a rocky foundation. You haven't even built a foundation. And if you try to go up, go vertical on a rocky foundation that is not solidified, guess what? It's all going to come crumbling down. Now, I do want to clarify, if you want to be a real estate agent, you want to be a wholesaler, like if you want to create active income and you don't, and you're broke, use that active income to get out of debt and build that foundation, great. But when it comes to buying and owning rental properties, running syndications, you better be ready to go, because it's not a broke man's game. And there's at some point, if you own, a capital call is coming. Somewhere, I don't care what anybody says, a capital call is coming. Something's breaking, something needs to be repaired, something gets damaged. And if you got no money, no credit, you're broke, you're going to hurt yourself more than help yourself.
Jaron's coming to buy that property from you. That's the reality. The reality is you're going to be a motivated seller, and Jaron's coming. If I'm listening to this right now, and I want to get into real estate, and I've heard all this, what are some of the things that I need to do? I think, you know, if I can lay the foundation for everybody here, it's really take control of your personal finances. I would also say read The Psychology of Money. Understand what your relationship with money is. It's important. I was a saver. It seems as if Jaron's a saver. You're not going to spend your way to creating wealth. You're going to save your way to creating wealth. That's the first component. The next component is to buy an asset that pays you for the events that you're trying to save for and to create the snowball of savings from those assets. Any other advice before we move on? Because I want to dive into the rest of your portfolio and the rest of your journey. If I'm here and I want to start, I'm really hungry. I've seen what you've done. What else should I be doing right now?
Yeah, so we hit the financial foundation. That's starting block number one. Once you have that built, it's time to inundate yourself in the industry. You mentioned it earlier, network. I know people think it's cliche. I don't know how else to say it. It works. Like, put yourself around people who are already where you want to go, because that's going to be the fastest way to get there. You need to understand how to find deals, which I think is probably the most important thing. Because in my journey, I found out if I got a good deal, I can make something happen, right? I know how to find deals, how to analyze deals, how to fund deals, how to rehab deals, how to manage or put management in place for deals. And if you look at those, four or five categories right there is kind of the big topics, and then there's details within those, and you go dig and learn everything you can about that, that's the next step. Now, we'll talk about where I've actually taken action, but what a lot of people do, Gino, and you see this, I know you do, on social media, is they get to that step. They're gung-ho, man. They got their finances. They're making good income. They want to go invest in real estate, but then they just become a sponge. But the sponge never actually takes the information that comes in and puts it to action. And so they just sit on the sidelines because of paralysis analysis, fear, whatever the case may be. And it's like, okay, good for you. You know this stuff. Big whoop. Go make it happen. And so don't get stuck in that state.
What makes you think people do that? I'll give you my theory. If you can share something, because if somebody's listening to this, they may have paralysis analysis. They may have true fear. It may be really scary for them. What makes you think people have that feeling, and what makes them stop? And what would you recommend them to do to get over that fear?
We work so hard for our money. And so you have this money, and it's kind of like you got your arms around it and you're protecting it. And you're like, I know if it stays here, at least you think, if it stays here, I can protect it. Well, it's actually losing value if it's in a savings account every year because of inflation. But generally, it's protected. The risk is mitigated. And so I think people get stuck there and they're scared. They think that if they make one step into real estate, stocks, whatever the case may be, starting a business, that they're opening themselves up to just a collapse. I think our mind goes straight to the worst that could happen. And that fear is very strong. And so what it does is it removes the creativity that allows you to think, okay, that could happen. All right, let's put that over here. Let's start thinking logically now. And then let's look at what data and statistics say give us a better chance of happening. And one thing I tell folks is I say the not investing in real estate is riskier for your future than investing in real estate. Because I can tell you one thing, if you don't invest in it, you're never going to be able to create the life that you dream of. But if you do, you at least give yourself that chance. And the more you learn about it, you can put these safety nets in place to do it the correct way and do it the right way. And I don't want this happening to me or anybody else, and I am very conservative, but if everything went wrong and you had to go back to zero, how's that any different than where you're already at? You get one life. One life. Don't be reckless. Do not misconstrue what I'm saying. But you might as well go have fun and give it your best shot.
To continue that thought or that thread, for me, I would turn everybody off who's telling you real estate's risky. It's because those people have never invested in real estate. And when you do get your first or second deal, who's coming over and saying, hey, Gino, you got any deals for me? That's the irony of life. Once you've done a couple, those same people come over to you. And for you out there, it is scary. It should be scary. You've never done this before. When I bought my first deal with Jake, I already had experience, but I still was pissing in my pants the night before closing on that very first 25-unit deal. I'd never done a deal with Jake. I had never been in the Knoxville market. It was scary, but what's the worst thing that can happen? Jared summed it up so beautifully. If I hadn't done that, I would still be in the same spot. I'd still be in the restaurant, washing dishes, hiding in the kitchen. So I took the shot. The worst thing that could have happened is if we had sold a deal at a loss, I would have lost a few bucks. No harm, no foul. I had done that before. Now, how do you overcome that? As far as what my advice would be and what I did is I found a partner. I don't think in the last 10 or 12 years let Jake down at all. He's in Aruba this week, baby. He's partying. Not on the show today. We're doing the show. I'm not saying, oh, I can't. No, you never, you get in a partner. And it's really important to pick the right partner as far as our values aligning and everything. You don't let that partner down. You work really hard for that partner. That partner will work hard for you. That's called an accountability partner. You can take it a step further by going out and finding a group like Jake and Gino. My only plug, go to jakeandgino.com/apply. Go apply to work with our team to see how you can find to become that multifamily entrepreneur. I did that. I joined tons of mentorships and I still do. Six figures a year I'm spending now when I didn't want to spend $600 back in the day. I was broke back then spending $600. Why was I broke? Was there a correlation? Yes, there was. There was definitely a correlation between the amount of money and time I spent on my education on myself versus working for somebody else or working for a small business. So understand that you need the accountability. You need the mentorship. You need the guidance, the partnership. That will all, to me, help pull it through and give yourself some time. We go to college. Jaron went to college for 4 years to play baseball. He got out broke. He wasn't making any money. Don't expect to get into real estate within a year and be financially free. It's going to take a couple of years. Even if it takes you 3 to 5 years, COVID happened 4 years ago. Let's put that into perspective. Time goes by so quick. Give yourself some time to grow and to be able to do all that work.
That's good stuff. That is such good stuff. People, you hit the nail on the head. They come in and they think, if I buy a couple properties, my life's changed immediately. No, anything worth having takes time. And I do like, I work with folks and they'll come in, and I'll be working with them for a month. And I'm not finding any deals. I'm like, you just started looking 3 weeks ago. Relax. Relax. You're going to be okay. You know, I love it. I mean, I'd rather work with people like that who are eager. But I'm like, this thing takes time. And it's the principle of compound, you know? I mean, you could look at the principle of compound anyway in life, right? Just continue doing something and it's going to multiply over time. So it's going to start off slow. Mm-hmm. But what ends up happening, and this is part of my journey in my portfolio, is it can pick up pretty quick depending on the volume that you work at. And it happens quicker than you think potentially, but you can't be expecting an overnight success because anything like that is usually a flash in the pan.
Let's dive into the personal side for a couple of minutes. You're sitting at the table with your wife and you say to her, we're buying a deal, our first deal. What is your reaction to that conversation?
Well, you said a partner, right? And you're talking about a real estate business partner. I think it's just as important for marriage. She, trust me, she let that be my arena. And so she was like, you know, she's involved to an extent, doesn't do any deal searching, deal analyzing. If I'm doing a flip, she'd be like, hey, let me design it, whatever. You know, you can go design it. But as far as trusting me to do it, we had that trust built. We knew it starts with aligned goals. Mm-hmm. So we both knew, hey, for all these years, we got to be disciplined so we can get out of debt. If not, we're going to live a slave life our entire life. And so we had done that together. So we'd earned each other's trust there. Now, this was the next journey is, okay, let's go create financial freedom. Let's go dabble in this real estate space. And she knew that to get to where we wanted to go, it was going to take something that involves some type of risk, but with good upside. And real estate was it. And we knew people who did it. And she said, go rock it and roll it.
And Jaron, when you had that conversation earlier on about getting rid of debt, spending less, was that a difficult conversation as well?
It was not as hard as it could be, as some people said, but I married a gem of a woman. She is great. We've been 10 years this year. And, I mean, she is just, she's awesome. We're aligned together. And so, but I work with folks that is a struggle. And I think when it's a struggle, you have to be careful how you present it. Because if you come on as attacking and shaming the other person, good luck. It's not going to work. So you need to, in my experience, I think it's been good to inundate them in environments where they're hearing it from somebody else. They're not going to want to hear it from you. So one thing we did, and I may have done it on purpose to inundate her at the time, didn't realize it, is when we were driving down the road for road trips, we would turn on Dave Ramsey podcasts. And then as we've progressed into business, I would turn on How I Built This by Guy Raz, one of my most fantastic podcasts. There's been real estate podcasts when we were in that journey. I would just, and so it's like you're on a 4-hour trip and you're just hearing it over and over and over. You're hearing these stories. Well, when they're hearing it from somebody else, it's hard not to believe it and want to adopt it. But just be careful how you present it and, you know, be loving with it because you're not going to have any success otherwise.
You have to paint the picture for your spouse. Yeah. When I told my wife back in 2013 that I wanted to do real estate with Jake, she was full on board. But I'm like, I want to become financially free. And to her, when we got married in 1998, she became financially free back then. So she didn't know what that meant. So I'm using these terms that she doesn't understand. There's a shoebox, there's money. I'm financially free, Gino. I'm the one who's worried about the bills and making the money. And I said, no, Julia, financial freedom to me is not worrying about a $5,000 dental bill. You know, being able to pay my mortgage, being able to pay for the cars, being able to pay and have friends come down for vacations, being able to go out to dinner and not looking at the right side.
How nice is that, by the way? Like just being able to go out to eat and just get what you want. I mean, I remember a day where like I couldn't do that.
Yes.
But it's amazing. It's so
nice. And but to my point, paint the picture to them of what your true why is. I really wanted to have a business where I could have my family inside of it and that they're part of the Jake and Gino community. Now she's got her own branch and she's life coaching. So I painted that picture for her as well. And I said, hey, we could possibly leave New York and go to Florida in warmer weather. So make sure that you understand first and foremost why you're doing it. You need to have clarity on that. I knew why. Well, I sort of did and I didn't. I didn't want to do this restaurant thing. I wanted to do something else. And I like this. And I knew that I could build wealth and I knew that I could scale a business. But understanding that will give you clarity and have an open and honest conversation and let them feel your pain. I'm sure your wife felt your pain. My wife felt my pain. And I'm going to end with this before I ask you the next question. If your spouse gives you the trust, you better work your ass off. You better not say to them, I'm tired tonight, or I can't do this, or I can't go do a property tour, or no, there's no excuses to your partner, whether it's your business partner or your spouse. That's the level of commitment that you need to have. And it's the same thing when you're dealing with investors or whoever. If they are giving you some sort of money, you're being a steward. So you're being a steward for your family, and you need to have that level of commitment for your spouse, for your partner. If they're giving you that level of trust, you better push all in, baby.
That's good. That's really good. Spot on.
You've got a house right now. What's the next step? What do you do after you buy your first rental property?
Yep. So we went the single family route. You know, that was how we started. And so I bought the first one, used my own money, 20% down, rehabbed it with my own capital, right? So I'd saved up after we got out of debt. Then I had enough to do another one later that year. 20% down.
That must have felt great, huh? That must have felt really great to be able to do that, huh? Like, I'm buying my own house. I'm fixing it up. I got 20% to put down. I'm actually creating a place for somebody to live. Just the thought of that process is amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it was so cool. And then actually acting on it and seeing it come to fruition. I mean, getting it rented out and it looks good. And you're posting it on Facebook. This is long before I had the Finance Cowboy brand. And you're like, oh, everybody look at what we did. You know, anybody need a place to rent? You know, and you're like really excited. And, you know, one thing we ran into that completely changed our life, though, was after that second property, I was about out of capital. So we had worked out of debt, saved up around whatever, 40, 50 grand. By the time I bought those two houses and rehabbed them, our capital's gone. And so I had this realization of, okay, if I really want to scale this, I need to make a lot more money, because at this point I was already making decent money now, you know, by 2018. Or I need to figure out how to partner up with people who will give me. And so that is when we ran into what is now coined the Burr strategy. If you follow me on social media, you'll hear me talk about it a lot. But, you know, I don't think I knew the name of it at the time. I felt as though I had found, me and my buddy had, we'd either done a deal together and it like triggered in my mind, or he had done one and told me about it where he said, bro, I bought this property undervalued and I fixed it up. And then I went to a bank and refinanced it and got all my cash back. I was like, do what? Hold on. Say what? Can you break that down again? And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And so we started doing the Burr method. And so I had a private lender, and you work with hard money lenders. I mean, you can use, I've used a HELOC. You know, there's tons of different ways that you can gain capital. You can use your own cash, even if it's not other people's money. And we would buy these properties up front with cash, whether it was our cash, somebody else's cash, hard money lender. We would fix them up, and then we'd get a renter in place. Then we would go to the small local bank and be like, hey, we want to refinance, do what's called a cash out refinance into a long-term stable loan with you. Most commercial notes are 20-year notes, 5-year AMs, whatever it was, with 5.5% interest at the time. So they would order an appraisal, and now because we bought the property distressed and undervalued and fixed it up, it's worth way more. And they would write us a check for 80% of the new appraised value. So I'd take that check. You know the game, deposit into my account, take that, pay off my private lender, a hard money lender, a HELOC, or myself if I use my cash, and now I had all my firepower back. And so I talked about income being your firepower when you're trying to get out of debt. Well, now firepower for us in our journey, and there's tons of ways to skin this cat, but for us in our journey has been leveraging other folks' money to buy distressed, undervalued properties, making them pretty, getting that money back and repeating over and over again. So we bought two properties in 2018. And then in 2019, we bought either 19 or 20 more. So we really, really scaled within a year and a half time frame. And that was when it was like, holy crap, this is cool.
Jake and I call it the refi and roll. You refinance a property and you roll the proceeds into the next property. And I think one of the major differences between single family and what we're doing in multifamily is just the numbers. Listen, we've been able to refinance out over $25 million from the property. And I'm the pizza guy. If I look at that and I say to myself, that's sort of a loan back to yourself, so it's tax-free at the time. How many pizzas do I need to make in order to net $25 million? I don't even know the number. It's insane, the number, but that's the power. And, you know, OPM, that word gets thrown around, but you know what? You're using other people's money. Once again, you're the financial steward. You're buying these assets. You're just taking the money and you're bringing it over. Last question before we go to the short answers. How were you able to raise capital? I mean, can you talk about branding a little bit and raising capital and saying, you know what, time out. I'm getting myself out there. If I'm starting this business or I've got a few deals, how do I go out and start raising money from these private lenders or from these hard money lenders?
Yep. So to be clear, I did not have my brand at the time. So this was just Jaren Sustar. Finance Cowboy was years from existing. So now it's really easy, obviously, you know, because everybody's like, hey, how can I lend to you? But back then it wasn't as easy. And so I mentioned it. We would post our projects and kind of keep what was going on Facebook. And so people were seeing it. People were seeing that we're starting to do real estate. We live in a small town. So a lot of people aren't necessarily visible that they're doing. Number one, people aren't doing a lot of real estate. Number two, the ones who aren't necessarily visible. And so people started seeing, you know, what we were doing. And, you know, we started with like family and friends. I think that's the easiest place to start. Now, if you don't have that, that's okay. But I'm telling you, start there. Whether it's an immediate family member, somebody down the line, a friend, a coworker. And then if they don't have it, well, then chase their networks down. Don't just stop at no. Mm-hmm. Chase down the networks. Okay, Dad, I mean, I understand you can't lend to me, but like my dad's a pastor. He's like, who in the church, you know, does well, or who has a business, or who invests in real estate? Do you know anybody? Take them to lunch. Same thing with coworkers and friends, and just chase that down until you find somebody who lends. Hard money lenders, if you've done a couple properties, most of them are, you know, depending on the economy, pretty eager to lend. And so a lot of them that we work with will lend you, you know, 85 to 95% of the purchase price and then 100% of rehab. And so you're just having to come up with 10 to 15% down payment. Everything else is covered, plus the holding costs. Well, now instead of having to go ask family, friends, coworkers, other investor for the entire amount of a purchase. So say you're buying a home for 150 grand, instead of going to this person who hadn't worked with you before and saying, can I have 150,000? You say, hey, I've got the majority of this covered. Would you be interested in covering my gap funding to get me to the closing table plus my closing? And so I can sit here, Gino, for days and talk about structuring. But back to your question of branding, I think just letting people know you're doing deals, showing the deals you've done, the numbers, how you're buying undervalued, how you're rehabbing them, what the rents are at, what your ratios are, and then let the deal do the talking. And I mentioned this earlier in the show. If you can learn how to find good deals, it's interesting how everything else tends to fall into place, even the capital. Mm-hmm. And so if you can lock up a fantastic deal and you got a little bit of hustle in you, there's a pretty darn good chance you're going to find somebody who wants to give you the capital.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from zero units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Build Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing company.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey in multifamily.
Jaren, when was the idea of leaving your job When did that seed start to germinate in your mind?
I don't know. See, I still work W-2, Gino. I still to this day have leveraged it the entire time. So
that's awesome.
And the
brother.
Reason why, you know, I think this is a great subject. We could talk an entire hour about this. I think the hustle culture on social media has made every W-2 bad, right? And so it's like, do everything you can to escape your job. Well, if you hate your job. So I've been doing the same gig in medical device for 7 years. I have the greatest customers. I work with people in pre-hospital. I love them. They love me. I'm helping save people's lives with the products I sell. And so I have leveraged. I'm huge on leveraging your W-2 to
get
to where you want to go. But to your question, what we've done is we've put ourselves in a position to, if I should want to, then I can. And that was it for me. So I caution people, be very, very careful about living with the escape mentality your whole life, because it takes a while to build financial freedom. So you could waste 5 to 7 years of your life living miserably because you're trying to escape where you currently are. Why don't we change our current scenario? Let's go do something a little more interesting that's not making us dread every Sunday night until we can reach that financial freedom. And then when you reach that financial freedom, make the decision. Do I want to walk away from what I'm doing now because I enjoy it, or don't want to stay here, or because I don't enjoy it, don't want to stay here because I do enjoy it? And so that's the decision, you know, the place that we've put ourselves in life. And, you know, we'll see where the road takes us. But I, you know, you don't have to escape if you don't want to.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. And I had a similar journey with you. I started investing with Jake in 2011. We bought our first deal in 2013. I left the restaurant in 2016. So I was there for 5 years of meeting Jake and starting to do deals. He left a lot sooner because he had less, you know, he had no kids. He was living in Tennessee. His burn rate was a lot less. I just figured when I had enough cash flow coming in and I could leave responsibly and I had a partner, my brother was in the restaurant, you don't have to burn the ships. I think maybe mentally you can say, listen, if that's what you're choosing to do, give yourself some time. Don't put yourself on the pressure, because that W-2 job will allow you to qualify for those loans and will allow you to give you that cushion. And the money you're making in the real estate business doesn't have to feed your lifestyle. It can go into going into other deals. And that's how I was able to, because those refis early on, I didn't have to pay the groceries. I didn't have to go buy any diapers. That money went right into buying more deals. So if you're on the fence and saying, well, all these people on Instagram are quitting their jobs in 12 months or 24 months, that doesn't have to be you. If you do this responsibly, start investing today, within 5 years of you buying a few properties and creating wealth, and then all of a sudden you're exiting those deals and creating equity and able to replace that equity and put into another deal, that is a solid, smooth, albeit safe way to do it. As far as I think we're preaching the same thing, me and you.
100%. I mean, that's spot on. That is spot on. It leverage that W-2. And then put yourself in a position to make whatever decision you want. And if you do that, you're happy.
I think the only other thing I would say to that is what you're trying to do is you're trying to create autonomy for yourself, because you were talking about happiness. And in psychology of money, that word autonomy was thrown around a lot of times. And money can create autonomy for you. It can give you the freedom. And that's what we're striving for. You have the optionality to leave your job if you want to. Yeah. But you don't have to. And that's exactly what we want. Autonomy gives us choice. It gives us freedom. It gives us the ability to choose. You can be on this podcast right now if you want to, or you don't have to. That's power in that. So I think that's what money allows us to do. That's why we're trying to accumulate money. Money is just the result of our actions of being really good. The better you are, the more money you make, possibly if you do it wisely, the easier it will be to become what we say financially autonomous. Books. Any book recommendations?
Oh, Lord. I got a lot of book recommendations.
Good.
Depends on the topic. But obviously, if you're starting way back, Richest Man in Babylon, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Millionaire Next Door, those are three good ones. Business-wise, Good to Great. Just read one. Die with Zero was very interesting. Don't know if you've read that yet. Some fluff. Sorry if the author hears this, but the premise of it was very powerful. Talking about, you know, let's make sure we're aligning our life to do what we want to do and not just accumulate all this wealth and die with millions in the bank and never get to use it. Go use it, whether you're giving it to your kids, blah, blah, blah. You know, marketing. I love Russell Brunson stuff, .com Secrets, his books. I mean, I could go on and on. So I'm a big avid reader and I love about anything.
What are you excited about next couple of years? Any projects?
Man, you know, this is probably counterintuitive to to hustle culture, because I'm young. I'm only 32, so this sounds like entitled. But I have been on a pretty good grind for for the last however many 12 years, 10 to 12 years. I am looking forward to actually utilizing my autonomy over the next 5 years. And so we've built, you get busy just building and you don't really take the chance to look at like, what does that compound effect look like now? And we're in a place now, Gino, with our portfolio, it's like, dude, I don't really need to buy anything for the long term again. Like our life, is already good now. But like, if you look at the numbers when we're 40, 45, 50, 60, 70, it's like, you can buy just to keep buying, but what can you do to increase your now even more? So I think for us is like increasing our now more. So I'll probably, may buy more properties with more equity to raise higher cash flow, may do a few more flips, and then working around my house, like slowing the grind down a little bit. We've got a great team at Finance Cowboy. I got a big piece of land, big house. I need to put fence in. I've started. I need to build a barn. I need to get the garden going. And so I see my life kind of like, you kind of run on the cortisol for a while. You understand the hustle. I'm at that stage where it's like, deep breath. Let's enjoy the fruits of our labor.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Where can the listeners get a hold of you?
Instagram at Finance Cowboy. That's we're very busy there. And I put a lot of content out on YouTube as well at Finance Cowboy. That's longer form. If you like podcasts, if you like YouTube videos, and those are two main places. And we got a bunch of different resources that we can send your way.
To recap Jaron's story, gets out of college, only has 40% of his scholarship paid though. I don't know. The other 60%, someone's paying for it. It ain't the college. It probably ain't his dad either, because his dad's a pastor.
Yep.
Jesus. And he gets out, got $100,000 in debt. And it's like, what do I do here? And you look around, you don't want to do what everyone else is doing. First thing he needs to do is, I got to make more money. Okay, that's step number one. Step number two, and of course, he becomes a pharmaceutical sales rep, because that's where the big bucks are, right, Jake? Step number two, he cuts his expenses. And within 5 years, all of a sudden, he sees his expenses. He sees that light at the end of the tunnel, and his expenses are all paid. And now he's got that foundation. He's building that nice foundation, everybody. And then the moment that everything changes for him, he finally buys something in his life that pays him. Money's going to him, not away from him. And from there, he's hooked. But it is a seminal moment because it's scary. He doesn't do it by himself. He finds somebody. He finds a help to have him help him close this first deal. But after he closed the first deal, he probably looked back and says, it wasn't that scary. No bears were chasing me. I closed the deal. And then from there, goes and looks for his next deal and then his next deal. And from there, he builds the Finance Cowboy brand. And now he's teaching others to become financially free through investing in real estate. Jaron, thanks for being on the show, brother. Appreciate it.
Gino, I enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me.